This is the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast, presented by Massage Envy, the only podcast devoted entirely to Arkansas baseball. Now here's Matt Jones.
Today on the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast, Arkansas pitching coach Matt Hobbs stops by for an extended discussion on a number of topics. We talk about life after Kevin Copps, the pitchers who have stood out to Matt this fall during the Razorbacks fall baseball practice, the technology inside the Razorbacks' new $27 million Hunt Baseball Development Center, and how the Razorbacks' football success early this year helps the Razorbacks in baseball recruiting. We'll get to that conversation with Matt Hobbs here in a few minutes. But first, some notes since our last podcast. Razorbacks are about a month into fall baseball. They will have their annual Fall World Series, that's also called the Cardinal and White Series, beginning Friday, October 8th at Baumwalker Stadium. It'll be a best-of-five series this year. The other dates will be Saturday, October 9th and Monday, October 11th. And if necessary, there will also be scrimmages played Wednesday, October 13th and Friday, October 15th. Fall baseball will end mid-October this year. They have a 45-day window in which to practice 29 times. They began fall baseball practice in early September. Now, the times haven't been announced yet for the Fall World Series. All of those scrimmages are going to be open to the public, and so are all of the practices that lead up to them. The Razorbacks very happy this fall to be able to let fans back out to the ballpark after those practices were closed a year ago due to COVID. Arkansas is not going to play an exhibition game against another opponent this fall. Head coach Dave Van Horn told me earlier this month that he felt those fall exhibition games that they played in previous years, you know, against Oklahoma, at Oklahoma State, Wichita State came in here for one year. They've also played Arkansas Little Rock. He said that he felt like those had an adverse effect on his fall practices those year because of the amount of preparation that they had to put into those games, but then also the number of pitchers that they had to throw in those exhibitions. According to Van Horn, he felt like it took away some of the opportunities for the team to scrimmage itself during the fall, and he feels like those inter-squad scrimmages are very important. So the Razorbacks, unlike a lot of teams in college baseball right now, are not going to play an opponent this fall. Now, recruiting is going really well for the Razorbacks. Just in the last month, they've got a number of high-profile recruits in the next four classes, classes of 22, 23, 24, and 25. A few of those of note, Mason Neville is an outfielder from Las Vegas in the class of 2022, big left-handed hitter. I believe he's a top 100 player in that class, according to Perfect Game. Cole Phillips, another noteworthy player who they've had commit to them lately, right-handed pitcher, decommitted from Baylor, top 200 in the class of 2022. In the class of 23, Dylan Quested is a right-handed pitcher from Waterford, Wisconsin, a top 50 nationally player, top-ranked player in the state of Wisconsin. Adam Hockman is a 6'4" left-hander from the St. Louis area. Perfect Game ranks him 14th. And he's committed to Arkansas. And then even into the class of 25, these are freshmen in high school, by the way. It's amazing how far in advance that recruiting is done. Landon Schaefer is a pitcher infielder from right here in Fayetteville, plays over at Fayetteville High School. He's a top 50 in the class of 25, according to Perfect Game. His dad is Todd Schaefer, who's an assistant coach for Mike Neighbors on the Razorback women's basketball team. And then Ty Briscoe is a top 25 recruit, according to Perfect Game. Of course, in those lower classes, those numbers can certainly fluctuate quite a bit over the next few years. But Briscoe, a 5'11" left-handed pitcher from Abilene, Texas, who's recently committed to the Razorbacks. All of those players that I just mentioned have committed to Arkansas within the past 6 or 7 weeks. Coming up, our conversation with Arkansas pitching coach Matt Hobbs. But first, a word from our sponsor.
Massage Envy with clinics in Rogers and Fayetteville has been awarded Northwest Arkansas's Best Day Spa and Best Massage. One of the reasons is our care for athletes, both serious and recreational. We now offer rapid tension relief sessions using a high-caliber vibrating tool and total body stretch sessions like the ones used by the PGA. Both of these new services can be combined with the always popular deep muscle treatment. So whether you compete or just want to relax, there is no place better than Massage Envy.
WholeHogSports.com has the largest, most experienced staff of reporters covering sports in Arkansas. Football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. You'll find it at WholeHogSports.com. The website includes up-to-minute news, daily commentaries, and award-winning photography from the staffs of Hogs Illustrated and the Democrat Gazette. For subscriptions, call 1-800-757-6277. That's 1-800-757-6277. Or visit us online today. WholeHogSports.com.
Welcome back to the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast, presented by Massage Envy.
Matt Hobbs is in his fourth season as the Razorbacks pitching coach. Came over to Arkansas in November of 2018 after Wes Johnson was hired as the pitching coach for the Minnesota Twins. He spent two full seasons with the Razorbacks. Of course, the 2020 season was suspended after 4 weeks due to the COVID outbreak. 2019, the Razorbacks went to the College World Series, won the SEC West, led that year by some strong pitching. The likes of Isaiah Campbell, Matt Cronin obviously was a great closer for that 2019 team. And then just this last season in 2021, Arkansas won the SEC regular season and tournament championships, pitched really well during the SEC tournament in Hoover. And of course, the 21 team was led by Kevin Copps, won just about every National Player of the Year award you can win, including the Dick Houser Trophy and the Golden Spikes Award. Also had an all-SEC pitcher in Patrick Wicklander this last season, who worked with Matt Hobbs for his entire 3 years in Fayetteville. Matt has set aside a lot of time today to talk to us about his pitching staff. And Matt, we appreciate you coming on with us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much for having me.
So you're about halfway through, maybe a little over halfway through fall ball at this point. What have been your takeaways from your pitching staff through the first few weeks of this fall season?
So far, it's an exciting group, you know. I mean, you got some new guys, a lot of new guys, and then some returners that have come back better. So I think that the number one thing I come away with is it's an exciting mix of old and new. In some ways, kind of like last year's group, an exciting mix of new guys and older guys and some returners. So it's definitely something that has given us a lot of hope for the future and then given us a lot of hope for the present also.
You know, one of the questions I'll be the first to ask you, and I'm sure you're going to get this throughout, you know, the next several months leading up to the season, is how do you replace Kevin Copps? What he meant to your pitching staff? How do you replace him? And who are some of the early candidates that you think are going to step up? I know you can't ever have anybody that's going to probably give you the type of innings and performances that he gave you, but you do have guys that can step up and give you production. Who are the ones that you look at as leaders right now in your pitching staff?
I think you have, when you're talking about replacing somebody like a Kevin Copps, I mean, that's not going to happen because of the performance and because of what he meant to the team and kind of the whole of him is tough to replace with one particular person. So you look at it as like, this is going to be a lot of parts to replace Kevin. I look at it the same way if we had actually played the 20 season all the way through, is how do you replace, you know, an Isaiah Campbell and a Matt Cronin? It's kind of the same thing. You have these like really important pitchers and you're looking at replacing them with multiple people instead of just, you know, you're just going to build yourself another Kevin. So you look at returners first and guys that have been able to come back and improve themselves. And, you know, obviously like start with Connor Nolan, he's gotten a lot better. And that's been a big boost for the team. He's gotten himself to the position where you're feeling really good about him. And Jackson Wiggins has done the same thing. And then you look at the new guys and say, all right, where are some of these guys that are going to be coming to be potentially able to throw some leverage for us? And, you know, Nick Moten has been a real nice surprise as a guy that can come in and just be an absolute shutdown arm in the bullpen, we think, or, you know, potentially start. You know, you never know truly what's going to happen until the season gets here, but he certainly carved himself out a role, I think, on the team. And then a Hagen Smith has come in and just been as advertised, kind of what we thought he was going to be, just an unbelievably talented pitcher who's also competitive and can locate all three of his pitches in the zone. So then you look to what are the intangibles that Kevin had that you're going to be able to replace with somebody. And those are the toughest ones, to be honest. Talent, we're always going to have talented players, I think, at Arkansas, just because of the nature of the program and what it's become over the last two decades with Coach Van Horn here. You're always going to have pretty good players. But to replace the leadership and to replace, you know, some of the intangibles that Kevin had. You have to look to like a Zebulon Vermillion and a Cole Ramage and guys that have been through it and got to see it from the start. So I think it's kind of like an amalgamation of parts.
You mentioned Connor Noland, and it's been such an interesting time watching his progression as a baseball player. 19, he comes in, he had played football. He didn't get to go through the fall with you all. 20, mm-hmm. I thought he was off to a really good start, and then COVID happened. And then last year, I know you guys really liked the performance that he gave you in that Thursday game against SEMO, and then he has the arm injury that keeps him sidelined for 2 months. You mentioned you think he's better. What do you like about him? And I mean, do you think this is the season he can finally put it all together and give you a full season of, after a complete off season?
Yeah, I think that it's trending that way, certainly. I mean, you can't make any distinctive comments that are going to hold any water in September. But what we're seeing right now, I think, is the best version of Connor. The command he displayed as a freshman and that COVID year, and then better stuff. So, his stuff has gotten better. His command is back to kind of what it was. And you have the 21 season for Connor that, unfortunately, the way you look at it, it's like, man, that was kind of a wash just because he was never really healthy. I mean, at the end of the season, when he came back, he was doing that on guts and guts alone. He was healthy enough to pitch, but he wasn't in the shape that he probably needed to be as successful as everyone was expecting him to be. But the kid wanted the ball and he was healthy. So we gave it to him, and he had some outings for us at the end of that season that, you look at the Ole Miss outing in the conference tournament, and that you can really look to and say, all right, if we could get that version all the time, then you've got yourself a really good pitcher. But you couldn't get that version all the time with Connor just due to the fact that he was, probably not as built up as he needed to be able to give us the kind of leverage we would have needed from him towards the end of last season. But we're seeing a lot of that outing from Connor every time he takes the mound right now. So I think that, hopefully this is the year for him where everything just kind of comes together, where he can have himself a good season and, give everybody what they've been expecting from him. Certainly what he's been expecting from himself. So I do believe it's trending that way.
I talked to Peyton Paulette a few weeks ago. He said that the plan as of that time was to get him back out on the mound sometime late September, early October. Where is he in his rehab, and how soon is he to getting back on the mound, or has he already made it there yet?
So he's been on the mound. He's thrown a couple bullpens already and been very good. Where that leads us is still kind of like, there's a plan. I would say there's always a plan with everything that we do, but you have to have some freedom within the plan to be able to make some decisions on what you want to do, what the best thing is for the kid, the team, and then the integrity of the spring. So we're still making some decisions on that with Peyton, but he's been very good. He's, like I said, he's been back on the mound. He's thrown bullpens, looks incredibly healthy, looks good, throwing strikes, and has done a very good job with his recovery from that Florida injury. So the best I can say is that he has been throwing, he looks great, and we still are playing this kind of like, it's not a day-by-day thing, because like I said, there's a plan for everything that we're doing, but you have to have some freedom with exactly what the outcomes are.
You want to have him obviously ready for the season, but you also want to protect his arm because it's a draft year. And I know you've seen these projections where I think Baseball America came out and said he's the top college pitcher in the 22 draft. How do you balance those two things as you're trying to get him ready for the season?
I think you always have to start with what's the best thing for Peyton Paulette from a health standpoint. So I think the decisions start there. And then you have to make decisions based on what's best for, the kid and the team after that. Whenever you have a high profile player, that always has to go into some of the decisions that you make, but it can never override what's best for him personally, what's best for our team. So I think that Peyton is a team guy, and I think he looks at things like, what is the best thing for the Razorbacks, not what is the best thing for me as a draft pick. And we have to balance those things. We have to keep in mind what is the best thing for him as a draft pick in terms of how we build him up, because his future is incredibly important to me as a pitching coach and us as a coaching staff. So it's a tough balancing act. I will say that it is challenging when you're dealing with this, when you're dealing with guys that come into the season with some high expectations, but he's handled it about as well as you can. Just trying to just do his work day to day. And, we have to balance both of those things when we talk about the player's health and then the draft.
When you got to the regional and the super regional last season, you had to do some things with your bullpen to maybe compensate for the innings that you had lost, that you'd been getting out of Peyton Bollett to that point. How big of a loss did you feel like that was going into the postseason?
Oh, huge, huge loss for the team. When you don't have a guy that is capable of giving you six innings out of the, as a starter, or capable of throwing the last two to three innings out of the bullpen and being very effective. And like, it's like a shutdown arm that you just don't have anymore. So we did have to do some things that were different and have to put some guys in spots that they weren't accustomed to being in. But, you know, it's a huge loss when you lose anybody with Peyton's talent. And then also, the kind of person he is, having that presence on the field was a big loss and a big hit for us. And luckily, you know, from a team standpoint, even though we didn't get to the end, the guys really stepped into those roles and, you know, acquired those innings and did a great job with what they were asked to do.
I asked Peyton about the way last season ended, and he said, you know, the players who have come back, he said, you can see it in, you know, every ground ball they take or every pitch they throw, that, you know, they're really motivated by the way last season ended. And he said, and then on the flip side, it's really teaching the freshmen, you know, the right way to approach things. What have you seen in that regard this fall?
Yeah, I think that there's an expectation, you know, every year when you come into a place like Arkansas, that you expect that you're gonna end, you know, playing good baseball all the way through the season. And the way to do that is to do what Peyton was saying. Like, you have to have a lot of focus with every pitch, and you have to have a lot of focus with every swing and ground ball that you take if you're going to do those things at a high level. And I do believe that last season for the guys that are coming back did leave a taste in their mouth that they want to get out of there as fast as possible. And they do that with work. You know, you don't do that by getting to the first game of the season. You do it with work every single day. And you know, Peyton is right. You know, I've noticed a level of focus from some of the returners that felt like, you know, we didn't end where we would have wanted to. And I think that drives and motivates people, at least for the beginning. And then the motivation has to come from wanting to continue to get better, which I do believe that our group has done from the first day of individuals to the first day of fall practice to where we are currently. I feel like our team has done a really good job of trying to value those days and make the most of what they do on an individual basis day to day when they come out here. So I can definitely see what he's saying there. And, you know, I see that on a daily basis as well.
There were two pitchers who I was really intrigued by at the end of last year, Matt, and it was Heston Toll and Jackson Wiggins, because they you could just see them every time they came out. It seemed like they were getting better over, you know, the time before. They might struggle in an outing, but you could really see the stuff and the velocity and the movement that was a lot better than where it was early in the season or the first time that they pitched, I guess, in Toll's, in his instance. What have you seen from them in terms of growth since the end of last season, and how big of a piece do you feel like they are to your pitching staff in 22?
So both huge pieces. I'll start with Jackson. You know, I think that, you know, a lot was made of Jackson's season last year, especially at the beginning when he comes out and he's, you know, kind of closing games for us there as a freshman and doing a good job with it. And then moved into like a kind of a spot starting role down the stretch of the season. And, you know, probably is one of those guys that, you know, if he ends up throwing 60, 70 innings last season, who knows what he's like right now. Just didn't function the way that our team didn't function that way last year to get him those innings, just based on the nature of the season. But then he goes out with Team USA and he just shines with Team USA, has a great summer, learns a lot, is around very good players like he is here every day, is around great coaches in the summer, you know, some legends of the game that I think helped him grow up as a pitcher. And I know I appreciate the work that they did with him, certainly. And then comes back now and he works like a different player. He's a lot more focused with what he does. He's not trying to figure out how to do anything anymore. He just shows up and knows what he wants to do every day. He's continuing to add secondary pitches to his fastball, which is probably going to be one of the best in the United States. And, you know, I think that Jackson's made huge strides, and, you know, I expect huge things out of Jackson going forward into the spring, certainly. And then Heston, you know, what a good story that is, you know, being a kid that we were just going to redshirt and see what happened with him during the season. And he just pitched so well in the bullpen and the bullpens that he would throw with us. And when we'd get him in front of live hitters, getting our guys ready for the weekend. He just pitched so well. He just earned himself, you know, 12, 15 innings or whatever he ended up throwing last year. And then he pitched well when he pitched. And that's continued. He went out to San Luis Obispo with a really good pitching coach and did a good job this summer in growing and getting himself better. And he's come back. And statistically speaking, if that's all you cared about in the fall, he's had the best fall of any pitcher. Throwing the most amount of innings, most strikeouts, least amount of hits. I think he walked one guy all fall. He's been dynamite for us. And, you know, I think he's a huge part. He does it differently than, you know, Jackson does it with big velocity and, you know, incredible stuff. Heston stuff is really good, but it's going to be 88 to 91. You know, it's not, you know, up to 99 or 100 like Jack's, but, you know, Heston's got a plus slider and he's done a really good job developing his changeup. So he's come a long way as a pitcher. And I think that you're going to see a different version of Heston Toll this year than kind of just the freshman getting some innings. I do believe there's a big role for him out there.
I would assume you're probably looking at both of them as potential starters for you. I know you and I have talked in the past. I think you said that you want to have at least six guys that you go into a season feeling like you're, you know, feeling good about starting for you. Are they within those six?
Definitely. Both guys definitely within those six.
Who are some of the other guys you're looking at as starters?
Connor. I mean, I think Connor, just because of the experience, is a guy that you could look at being a starting pitcher and what he's done this fall. Obviously, we've talked about Jackson, Heston as guys, you know, Peyton Paulette, as he continues his recovery, is a guy that will be a starter as he comes back. And then you look at like a Hagen Smith, man. I mean, it's been so good as a freshman that he has to be in that group. Now, he's a freshman and he still has a lot of work to do, but he has to fall in that group. And then you got Austin Ledbetter, who's another freshman from Bryant, who's done a really good job assimilating from being, you know, a big time quarterback in high school and playing two sports and having his attention divided to just kind of focusing on pitching. And that's led him to be a four pitch mix, kind of like upper 80s, low 90s velocity guy that throws a ton of strikes and has done a really good job. And then you have to look at, you know, Cole Ramage still, who's a veteran, Zebulon Vermillion, who's a veteran, guys that have just been through the battles and done some good things. And then, you know, hopefully, and he's been pitching well this fall, and, you know, you kind of see what happens with a guy like this, another Bryant product, and Will McIntyre, who is a guy that's goes out, throws strikes, has four pitches and competes his tail off. So we'll see where that takes us with him, you know, as he continues to develop and grow. But I feel like we have a solid mix of guys that could start with the group.
Mentioned McIntyre. He was one of three guys that I was really interested to watch this summer. He pitched well in the Northwoods League.
Yep.
You had Mark Adamiak, who pitched well up in Cape Cod, and you had Gabe Starks, who pitched really well out in the California League. How much are you watching what they're doing in the summer and analyzing that and trying to mold what you look for them in the fall around what you've seen from them this summer?
No, I would definitely watch what they do in the summer quite a bit from an inning standpoint. If they're a guy that's been a high usage guy, or a guy like Mark that needed to just go out and pitch, or a guy like Gabe too, that needed to go out and pitch, and then Will, you know, obviously not pitching last year, needed to go out and pitch. So as much as we could monitor the performance and talk to scouts who had seen them or talk to other, you know, teams that we knew, coaches of teams that we knew in the league, to try to get some feedback on how they were doing, then just obviously have the conversations with them about how they're doing. But yeah, all three of those guys went out and had great, you know, great summers. And Mark's another guy I didn't mention in the starting group for whatever reason. I might have just slipped my mind, but he's been great. And he's started three or four of these inter-squad games and done a good job in three of them. Had one rocky outing, but I expect him to rebound from that. He'll start in the red-white series. And I just feel like he's done a good job developing. Gabe Starks is going to be a cool story, I think. You know, a kid from right here in Arkansas in Pine Bluff, and, you know, last year got a little bit of a taste of it and was exciting, certainly with his stuff. And now that stuff has harnessed itself into, you know, two breaking balls for strikes and a fastball up to 97. So I think that there could be a cool story in there as Gabe continues to get better.
With McIntyre, right before the shutdown in 20, he'd come in a time or two and pitched pretty well for you guys. And then when the 21 season began, I remember Dave Van Horn was asked early in the year, where's Will McIntyre? And he said that he had struggled some. What was he struggling with early before the 21 season that kept him off the mound? And what has he done to impress you all since that point?
Will worked really hard the day he got here to get himself in shape. And then the kind of the COVID year happens and he comes back out of shape. I mean, flat line. That's what it was. He was not in good shape when he came back. And he to Will's credit, he buckled down, worked his butt off, lost like 25 pounds or roughly in that range. And he's been much better shape now. He's throwing the ball better. His stuff is back to what it was and better than it was. And you're right. You know, when we started off that 20 season, he had that start against Grand Canyon where I think he went 6 innings on like 85 pitches or something like that. And just giving us a huge boost in a time when we needed it the most. We were coming off of, you know, some rough play, and, you know, Will gave us this huge, huge boost on a Tuesday into a midweek series win on a Wednesday. And Will kind of sparked that with his outing, and he had another good outing against South Alabama the week before that and done a good job. So we had seen the makings of a strike thrower with multiple pitches and kind of a different look from some of our other guys, because it wasn't big velocity, but it was good stuff. And, you know, since that, the summer, kind of leading into the summer, really the last about month he was here with us before taking off for summer ball, he decided it was going to be a different Will McIntyre in terms of like how he tried to take care of his body and worked in the weight room. And, you know, you have to give Blaine Kinsley a lot of credit for his ability to, you know, keep him in shape, get him in shape, and impress the importance upon him of what you can do when you're physically fit. And I think Will is in a better place physically than he was during last season.
That COVID year had to be so hard on your pitchers, because you mentioned the workout side of it. And it's interesting because Kevin Copps comes back and looks like a completely different person than he did in 2020. But also, I feel like probably from a developmental standpoint, that had to be a really hard year, just because you weren't able to get your hands on them, and you know, they're having to go out and do things on their own, maybe for the first time, and who knows when.
Yeah, it was tough for the kids, you know, more than anything. And I think it was just it's difficult for anyone that had to go through, obviously what everybody went through and continues to go through with the COVID situation is not good. But from a baseball perspective, if we're just talking about that, it was the uncertainty of when do I get to play again? So how do you build up for uncertainty? And for some of the guys, it was getting back into that PT league right around here. And for some of the guys that were able to go out and play, like Kevin, I think was in Martinsville or a league in the Coastal Plains. And it was just like, when are they supposed to play? How many innings are they going to be able to throw? So what do you build them up? How do you build them up to do that? You're doing it all remotely. We were lucky to get some of those guys back on campus in the middle of the summer, but we couldn't really work with them. And then you have the fall restrictions about how many guys can be in the locker room. And it was very difficult, you know, a difficult year for those guys from a developmental standpoint. Certainly you don't get to spend, like, you take for granted sometimes you could just like go meet a guy at the PDC on a Saturday and work with him for an hour. You take that for granted sometimes, because it was like you had to, you know, make sure that he'd filled out his COVID forms and everything. It was just like there was a lot of hoops to jump through to get there to work with some players. And, you know, I never take it for granted anymore. Certainly, you know, every day we get to come and the team is together and the group is together, I feel like we owe it to them to have a good plan for them, and we owe it to them to give them as much as we can on those types of days. So it was a tough year for them, but I think that it's something that getting through it, and you mentioned Kevin, he'll never have to wonder if he can do it on his own ever again. So what a powerful thing for Kevin. And I think for the other guys that have either seen it get really good for them or struggle because of it, you know, now they've been through something like that. So the next time, you know, they're in a situation where it's kind of up to them, they're now armed with a new tool on their tool belt.
You mentioned Hagen Smith, and there's so much interest, I think, in him because of the stats that he had in high school. I mean, it looked like if our kids were playing MLB The Show on their Xbox, when you look at his, you know, his box scores from his high school year over at Bullard. What has he done, Matt, that has made him, number one, be able to pitch like he did in high school? But then you're not the first person I've heard that has said that he's brought it, you know, to this level. What do you think he's done well that's allowed him to continue to pitch that way or pitch well against more experienced hitters than what he was seeing last year?
I think the first thing you look at is just stuff. I mean, well, does stuff translate? You look at high school statistics and you think, all right, well, who is he playing against? What was the competition like? Is he able to get away with just throwing 90 mile an hour fastballs? But, you know, Hagen, before he got banged up in high school, had, you know, played baseball at a very high level and against high level competition, and then had to learn how to get people out with multiple pitches as a younger pitcher. So having a mix when he got here gives him a leg up. It's not just a good arm, you know, he does. I mean, obviously the kids, whatever he is, 92 to 95, 96, So he's got stuff, and then he's got some ability to pitch with his stuff. And then I think the most important thing is he's just made of the right things. Like, he's a tough kid who had to work his way back from an injury, and then had to establish himself again as a prospect on a national stage. And he definitely did that during the high school season. And, you know, that's not easy to do when you're coming back from Tommy John. And what he's done since he got here is he's just worked his tail off. I mean, he gets into the PDC every day, and it's, he's quiet, and he just goes about his business. And, you know, there's not a whole lot of having to tell him what to do day to day. I mean, he's got a very good idea of what he wants to do when he shows up. He had a good idea of what he wanted to get better at once he got here. And he's really taken that upon himself and just gone to work. And I don't think he expects anything from anybody. I don't think that he expects any special treatment because he was a high prospect. He was a high, you know, highly rated prospect coming in here. He just shows up like any other person, and he knows that he has to continue to get better every day. And I think that's the most impressive thing about Hagen so far is, you know, he doesn't come with any baggage of, you know, a high profile prospect that thinks he's owed something. He just comes in and works. It's awesome.
Another freshman you mentioned earlier was Austin Ledbetter. Interesting dynamic on this team is that, you know, he and DJ Baxendale are first cousins, and DJ helps you guys out, obviously. What's that dynamic been like watching those two interact?
It's pretty good. I mean, it's awesome. Obviously, anytime you have family on a team together, we always say that we are family as a team, and we are, but, you know, they are actually family. So, you know, they certainly have some history together, which has been fun to watch those guys interact and work. And, you know, obviously, you know, I think it gives Austin some comfort knowing you've got a friendly face that's going to be there every day. That's, you know, obviously had the experiences that DJ's had as a player and now as a coach. And, you know, I can't say enough about the job that DJ's done since he's been with us as a, you know, an undergrad assistant. So it's been really, really, really an awesome thing to get a chance to watch every day. And, you know, they just, it's like a normal pit player, you know, kind of like a player coach relationship. And I know that it's deeper than that, but, you know, I think that for Austin, I think it's got to be very comforting to see, you know, like I said, a friendly face in DJ.
Now, you'll probably disagree when I say this, but I think for people who have watched your team, that they would say that Matt Hobbs' least stressful time would be the ninth inning the last few years when you've had Matt Cronin and Kevin Copps come into the games. You know, you've been so fortunate having just shut down closers for you. Now, Kevin was more than just a closer last year. Who fills that role this year? You know, Elijah Trest is a player who's come back, and I thought he was going to potentially be your closer at some point in time during his career. Does he fit into that role? And who are some of the other pitchers that you look at?
Yeah, Elijah certainly is a guy that could come in and do that. Obviously turned down the draft last year to come back, and I think he feels like he's got something to prove. And, you know, that's always a good thing for a player to have, is a little bit of a chip on their shoulder when they come back. He's always operated that way, and he's a tough kid that's got good stuff. And he has done closer type things for us in the past. I mean, if you look back at the Texas Tech game, he was kind of he was in there at the end of the game to open the season. So, you know, he's had some experience in that role. So he's certainly a guy you'd have to look at as potentially a guy that could close. You know, Gabe Starks, honestly, is a guy that could fill in there because of the stuff, because of the breaking ball, because of, you know, he's got kind of a low, really low heartbeat, and he just kind of goes out there and pitches. And then, you know, Nick Moten is very exciting. As a new player that has come in and just looks like he is ready for the moment, whatever that moment proves to be for Nick is up in the air, but he could certainly be a guy that could go into that role. And then, you know, Zeb's closed. Zebulon Vermillion has closed for us in the past in the 20 season. And then a little bit in, you know, when we were trying to figure out the end of the game, a little bit there at the beginning of the season before Kevin kind of took it over. Zeb had a little experience towards the end of the game too. And as a starter. So I think it's pretty much up in the air, but we do have some exciting options for sure. And I mean, the other thing is, you know, at this time last year, Kevin Copps wasn't our closer. At the beginning of the season, Jackson Wiggins was closing for us. You know, Trest and Wiggins were kind of filling that role at the beginning of the season. And then, you know, Kevin kind of pitched his way into that role. So I think that it will emerge as we go down the road here a little bit, and we play more and we continue to see what these guys are capable of. But I think that role is going to emerge for us. And, you know, it's funny that you say that about the least stressful time. I was talking to a former player's parent at a wedding this past weekend, and they were saying how they would just, you know, they paced around when their son would pitch. Like when your son was pitching, that was like the most calm I was ever at during the course of the game. So
much of what your guys do is obviously, you know, the catcher, and you lose Casey Opitz, who's been so good for your pitching game the last few years. When I was talking with Nate a couple of weeks ago, he mentioned, at least from an offensive standpoint, he's really been impressed with Michael Turner, who's come in here and transferred from Kent State. Of course, you have Leach back behind the plate. What have you seen from your catchers right now, and who kind of seems to be your leading candidates to replace Opitz?
I think there's a pretty good, you know, battle between three guys right now, with, you know, Max Solis Jr., who's a freshman that has come in and opened some eyes, certainly offensively. And then you have Dylan, who we as a kind of a known commodity for us since he was here last year and got to work with Opitz for a year, and blocking, you know, throwing, you know, kind of handling some of those parts of the game he's very good at. And then Michael has been kind of like a surprise for us, honestly. I think that we thought we were getting a very good offensive player with Michael and didn't really know. We assumed and we hoped we were getting a good backstop back there, a guy that could catch, but, you know, he called his own game at Kent State and has had some experiences there. And, you know, we've turned him loose this fall, and really we turn all of our catchers loose and allow them to call pitches in the fall and just see what we have. It's kind of like the way we figured out that Opitz was going to be good at it. And Michael's been really good. Michael calls a great game, and, you know, the other guys have come along with that, with those things as well. But, you know, I'm excited to see who ends up winning this battle between those three guys, certainly. And, you know, I think we have good options.
You've got a couple of pitchers who are coming back from surgeries, Isaac Bracken and Nick Griffin. Where are they at in their rehab, and what do you foresee their roles potentially being next year?
So both guys are on the mound throwing bullpens. You know, Nick is obviously a high-profile guy we were real excited about coming in, and was hurt the summer prior to arriving. So we never really got to see it, but he's been good coming back. And, you know, with him and Isaac, you're going to go through the regular Tommy John, you know, recoveries, that there's going to be peaks and valleys with recovery. It's never as smooth as you think it's going to be. And, you know, both guys have done a good job of coming in and working every day. And, you know, Isaac was a guy we kind of had ticketed for a late inning role last year. And, you know, unfortunately he came up hurt in like the week before, 2 weeks before we got going in the spring. So he's a guy that has experience from Northern Colorado that has pitched in multiple roles. He's started, he's relieved. I think he could be like a kind of like a Swiss Army knife for us in the bullpen, and see where it takes us. Nick is a guy that's kind of always been a starter, and it'll be interesting to see how he assimilates to some shorter relief roles, because that's usually, you know, or shorter outings, at least in the beginning, which is what you do with guys that are returning from a surgery like that. And, you know, both guys have done a good job. So the roles, I wish I could give you something rock solid. I mean, I guess I could say with Isaac, it's going to be kind of a jack of all trades, and we'll see with Nick.
Matt, I think there were some people who were surprised you guys didn't go out and get some transfers over the summer. I do know you have like a Dylan Carter coming in from Crowder, who pitched real well in their national championship team. What was it about the players coming back that you guys felt comfortable, you know, staying with the players that either you had coming back or the players you had committed?
I think it's a mix of both. I mean, I felt like Connor Nolan was going to rebound. I just did. I don't know why I felt that way, but I did. I just felt like it's his time. I felt like Mark Adamiak was going to get better just by what I had seen. I felt like Heston Toll was ready to make a jump. You know, I felt really good about Jackson Wiggins, and felt good about our recruiting class that we were bringing in. I felt good about, you know, the freshmen that we were going to bring in. And I knew that we were getting Cole Ramage and Zebulon Vermillion back also. So I felt good about that. I knew that Bracken was going to be returning from injury. Kind of felt like Will McIntyre was ready to move into a bigger role, hopefully. And I just liked what we had here. And time will tell on, you know, whether or not that was a good idea. But I feel like when I look at our group, you know, I felt really good about them. And, you know, I like the culture that's been created here with those guys as leaders, and just kind of felt like this, it was the right thing to do to stay with what we have and continue to work with what we have. I don't think that there's anything wrong with going to the transfer portal for players. Certainly everybody does it, and we've done it, and we have plenty of good transfer portal guys on our team, and I've had them in the past, you know, with Isaac being one of them from last year that didn't get to pitch. And then obviously we had, you know, Lyle Lockhart on that team, and was a guy that came in, did a nice job for us. But I liked the culture and the mix of what was here, and you know, I feel like this is the group that we want to go to battle with.
Tell me if you think I'm wrong about this. I know Ramage and Copps were pretty close friends. It seemed like Cole Ramage's 21 was a little bit like Kevin Copps' 2020, in that it just didn't go the way I think that he hoped it would at that point in his career. What have you seen from him? What do you think it was that made him have such an up and down year this last season? And obviously, you don't ever want to say anybody's going to have a Kevin Copps type breakout season, but do you think that you could have that with him, that, you know, he could have a year after 21, kind of like what Copps had after 20?
I think that Cole's positioned himself to be able to have, you know, a very good year this year is what I will say about Cole. He stayed here this summer and he worked incredibly hard in the weight room and, you know, throwing and doing everything he needed to do to set himself up for this type of year. And, you know, I feel like you have a good point there with, you know, obviously him not having a good 21 or the year that he would have wanted to have as an older player. And I think that was an eye-opening experience for him to be able to sit there and watch Kevin go out and do what Kevin did. And, you know, you never want to say he's going to have a Kevin Copps type year or, you know, an Isaiah Campbell type year or anything like that, because that's a lot to put on anybody. But he could certainly have a huge rebound year for us. And, you know, I feel good about where Cole's at right now.
Before we get you out of here, I want to ask you a couple of things. First, about recruiting. I saw you and Dave and Nate on the sideline before the Texas game. I know that was a big weekend for you guys in terms of having recruits in here. Because the football team had not been very good up until this year. I think it must have been a little bit different for baseball in terms of recruiting, because you guys use those football game weeks as big recruiting weekends for you. How different is the dynamic this year, having such a, you know, obviously being able to bring them into such a big time environment like the football team had for that Texas game, versus the last couple of falls where you've been a part of the program?
Oh, huge, hugely exciting and different, you know, than it's been in the past. I mean, I remember still sitting there during the San Jose State game a couple of years ago with a bunch of high profile kids on campus, just being like, wow, I wish this was not going this way. But yeah, man, the Texas game, I mean, obviously it's a big recruiting weekend for us just because of the nature of what we thought was going to be on campus in terms of the environment and the vibe and everything that was going on in the football stadium. But you can't ask for the best recruiting you're going to have is energy. And that's what the football team and what they're doing right now is provided for other sports, baseball, obviously, is the one I'm talking about, but just an unbelievable amount of energy. And that's what a lot of the kids that were in that weekend kind of said, as we were just, you know, showing them around our place and welcoming them into kind of, hey, this is the way it is at Arkansas. And that was the one thing that kept coming back from a lot of those kids and parents was, wow, you know, there's just a ton of energy around here right now. And again, like I said, I remember it a couple of years ago when we were sitting at San Jose State game, like there is no energy here at all. Like it was just like, you're trying to just almost apologize for the game. And the Texas weekend, wow. I mean, and honestly, we had kids in for Rice too, and it was the same. I mean, in terms of the vibe and the positivity and everything around that football program right now, and just what a job they've done, their entire staff, to be able to, you know, bring the program back to a place where it's not only a respectable program, it's going to be a national power. So what a great thing for us from a recruiting standpoint. You can't ask for anything better than a good football team.
And I know you can't mention players, but that's been a pretty fruitful couple of weekends for you guys.
Absolutely. And I do feel like it has a ton to do with what goes on our football field.
Speaking of football, did you see Dave Van Horn catch the pass on the sideline?
I did. I saw him catch that. You know, he was pretty happy about being able to come down with that ball.
Yeah, I think so. He held it up and he wanted to show everybody that he had caught it. Real quick, you know, your reputation has been that you, and I think one of the reasons that you were attractive to, you know, to Coach Van Horn when you got the job was that you had a lot of the same type philosophies as Wes Johnson in terms of, you know, how you guys use technology and whatnot to coach your pitchers. You and I have talked about before some of the different, you know, methods that you use, Rapsodos and, TrackMans and you guys have got the Smart Mound in. Just kind of, if you would, just kind of tell us about all the technology and the new center that you opened here in the past couple of months, and maybe how that's helped you get more to your pitchers and in their development.
Yeah, I think that the new facility obviously is, I mean, I don't even really have words to describe it and how incredible it is and the job that was done to be able to put this building here as we sit here right now. What an amazing thing. But in just in our pitching space specifically, I mean, we still track the ball the same way. It's in the bullpens. We'll use Rapsodo because it's consistent within the bullpen. And then obviously on the field, we'll use TrackMan. That hasn't changed. We've upgraded our TrackMan unit to the V3 unit, which tracks player movement a little bit more than, you know, it has in the past. So you're looking at, instead of TrackMan, which is being radar based in the past, it's now got an optical element to it that's pretty exciting. So we've upgraded that unit. And that's been pretty helpful for us this fall. And then inside the building, you've got the Smart Mound, which is just a giant force plate developed by the new force people. We've had a good partnership with them over the past, you know, three plus years ever since I've been here. And then we have Kinetrax is a mocap system, motion capture system we now have in the pitching facility. So you're talking markerless motion capture that's connected to a Smart Mound that's got connected to Edgertronic cameras, which shoot at incredibly high frame rate. So we can track the ball that way too. You've got Rapsodo TrackMan, kind of pitcher's paradise, I guess, when you really break it down with everything that's in there and how those things help us. You know, it's a little bit different with everybody. You know, some guys were monitoring, you know, how much torque they have on their elbow when they throw a baseball if they're coming back from injury, or how much shoulder rotation they're acquiring when they throw a baseball if we're building them back up from a long shutdown period, or how much force they're able to use in their back foot if we're trying to make a mechanical change. So I think it allows us to be very objective about how we look at things instead of just kind of guessing, I guess, for lack of a better term. I think a lot of players that come here are you know, obviously they're incredibly talented if they're good enough to get here. And then some of them have turned down quite a bit of money to be a part of this program. And I feel a certain responsibility to all of those that come in here that they've turned down something to be here. They've either turned down other opportunities. They've turned down money from the draft. They've turned down, you know, other schools in our league. So everybody had to turn down something to get here. And I always feel like we have an onus to them to give them everything that we could possibly give them here as coaches. And one of the things that we can give them here is access to an unbelievable amount of technology. And that exists one place, really. I mean, I felt like we had built something pretty cool at Wake Forest before I left there, which is there's some similarities in terms of just the equipment that's within their facility, just because it was kind of what we built before I left. But this is just a different animal here now with what's been built at Arkansas. And, you know, I think it's just going to keep getting better, honestly. I mean, we have everything that we could possibly ever want or need. Some things that I can't even believe that we have that are great. But I don't think it stops here. You know, I think we continue to grow and continue to build this thing. And this facility has a life of its own. And it's going to continue to get better, as great as it is. And it's an unbelievable facility. I don't think anybody looks at it and says, all right, now we've arrived. You know, we look to try to earn this building every day that we're in it.
Matt, I could sit here and pick your brain all day, but we've hit our time limit. You've been great with your time, and I appreciate you doing this.
Yeah, of course. Thank you very much for having me. I look forward to talking again real soon.
Go over to WholeHogSports.com for all of our Razorback baseball coverage. Just go to the website, click the baseball tab at the top of the page. There you'll find a number of stories that we've had so far during the fall. We've got more coverage planned. Dave Van Horn last weekend, when he was in Arlington, Texas for that Arkansas-Texas A&M football game, he spoke to Bob Holt about being on the sideline, being invited there, canceling practice, and coming down to support his friend Sam Pittman. Really interesting look into the dynamics between the relationships of Razorback head coaches from different sports. Also got an update on Peyton Paulette. Spent a lot of time talking to Peyton recently about that injury he suffered against Florida back in the spring, the scare that it gave him, and then the relief that he had when he found that he wasn't going to need surgery. A lot more at WholeHogSports.com. We'll be back with another Whole Hog Baseball podcast in October. Until then, I'm Matt Jones. Thanks for joining us.
The proceeding has been a production of WholeHogSports.com. Look for our latest podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast store. And visit us anytime at WholeHogSports.com for the latest news and commentary.